Welcome to the TaxCast, 15 minutes of eye-opening global news and analysis on tax havens and corruption services from the Tax Justice Network, with me, Naomi Fowler. The TaxCast is available to everyone for download and broadcast on www.tackletaxhavens.com.
Pay your tax! Pay your tax! Pay your tax!
That's one of over 40 protests at Starbucks stores across the UK this month over their corporation tax. In the last 3 years, they declared a loss and paid zero, while telling investors how profitable they were. Starbucks tried a bit of damage limitation by offering to pay a voluntary tax contribution over the next 2 years, but, well, little people don't get to tell the tax man how much they're going to pay, and neither should Starbucks. More on that later. There were protests too by US citizens in the tax haven of the Cayman Islands outside an office building where around 18,000 corporations hide their tax dollars. The US could recover an estimated $150 billion a year from offshore centres. That'd be problem solved for the deficit. Other events this month, impossible to keep up with. Banks, too big to fail, too big to prosecute. HSBC paid a record $1.9 billion settlement for money laundering and other violations, but that's still only the equivalent of 4 or 5 weeks' earnings based on last year's pre-tax profits. More fines. UBS paid $1.2 billion for interest rate rigging. There were 3 arrests this month connected to the LIBOR scandal, at least there are some. 2 former UBS employees are facing criminal charges, and around 20 other major banks are still under investigation. Deutsche Bank offices in Germany were raided this month. 2 of its top executives are at the centre of a tax evasion investigation. France, the UK, Italy and Australia are now all investigating Google's tax affairs. Police raided Google's offices in France, and police in Italy raided Facebook's headquarters there. And my personal favourite this month, a French minister who announced a crackdown on tax fraud was recorded discussing his secret Swiss bank account. And that's a very quick roundup for this month. Now we're going to talk to tax justice economist Richard Murphy for his take on events. OK, Richard, we've had HSBC Bank paying the biggest bank fine to date for violating banking laws, laundering billions of dollars of money from Mexico. I think they were shipping dollars into New York from their Mexican branch. The fine, I think, is equivalent to about 5 weeks' income for the bank. That's a bit like a parking ticket. And the US authorities chose not to prosecute because it might topple the bank and endanger the global financial system.
This is a really worrying development. When a bank is basically beyond the rule of law, which is what this decision implies, then we are at a point where, frankly, we're into a lawless society. These people can act with impunity. They can money launder to some extent without concern. We have seen this totally amoral approach towards financial services creeping through the system. And the more that is rewarded by the message being sent out that these companies are immune from prosecution, the more likely it is we will see an increase in such arrangements taking place. The HSBC signal is too big to prosecute, carry on at will.
So what needs to happen now?
Right at the very top of these companies, there is a board of directors. They are responsible for putting in place a control environment. It is called a system of internal controls that makes sure that the law is complied with and that proper regulation is followed. If they fail to do that, then they should be made personally liable for that failure. And if they knew they could go to prison, and if some of them did go to prison, then their attitude would change overnight. This would not then become a cold-hearted business calculation of profit or loss. Can we afford to take a risk of breaking the law or not? But this would become a matter of, I'm going to serve some time inside and I may not enjoy that. And my reputation would be shattered. That and that alone has the power to change attitudes in these banks for good.
Right, as the individual is in fact liable if we break the law. So yes, let's talk about Starbucks in the UK. The stores there have been hit by protests. Sales are down there. They tried to head off the protest by offering, very generously, to pay some corporation tax after all.
Cautiously. I think that we should say that there is a victory in this, in the sense that there has been an awareness created that not paying tax can harm your profitability, and Starbucks are recognising that fact, and so that's good news. The bad news, and I think the bad here outweighs the good, is that actually Starbucks are being, I think, pretty cynical in their offer. What they're suggesting they will do is not claim certain expenses, particularly payments on royalties, payments on the price of the coffee they're buying, and payments on loan interest, which it has been suggested has been overpriced. Those are the three components of the allegations against Starbucks. And they won't claim those for a couple of years, and as a result, will therefore record profits and therefore pay tax. Now, let's be clear, they're not actually changing any of these arrangements. They're simply saying that for a couple of years they won't claim the costs. So in 2 years' time, they're hoping that everything will have gone away, the world will have calmed down, they won't be noticed when they, of course, begin to reclaim these charges and therefore stop paying tax again. What we actually want is for Starbucks to change their systems so that they stop overpricing for coffee. They stop paying excessive royalties, which can't be justified by the economic situation of the company in the UK, and they stop charging too high a rate of interest on their loans from tax haven companies into the UK. If they restructured their business to stop that happening, then we would know there was real fundamental change. And if they offered us country by country reporting so that we could see in the future which countries they pay tax in, how much they pay in tax and where, then of course we'd have the information to say, yep, they really have reformed themselves. But right now, none of those things are happening.
Right, and in terms of reputational damage, they're obviously worried. Their sales do seem to be affected by this. Regarding companies and how consumers can make an informed choice on these things, you're working on a special rating system about corporate tax responsibility and transparency, and that should be coming in 2013.
Yes, we are trying to create a new index, a fair tax mark it might be called, we're not quite sure of the final name as yet. But the point about it is that it actually is quite a complicated process to go through here to make sure we're being fair to companies. We will rank them and we expect to give a score between 0 and 15 so that companies will be given an overall rating and also be told how they could improve it, which is incredibly important. We want to create change, and therefore to provide companies with an opportunity to actually improve their score is essential to what we're doing.
Thanks, Richard. Tax justice economist Richard Murphy. Now it's time for the TaxCast special feature. Google avoided paying about $2 billion in taxes last year. Google boss Eric Schmidt defended his company's use of the tax haven of Bermuda, saying it's called capitalism. But his version of capitalism is destructive, parasitic, and anti-people. It doesn't have to be that way. This month, the TaxCast investigates reform and unitary tax.
Is Google doing a great majority of their business in Bermuda? Who believes that? Who in their right mind thinks that, oh yeah, yeah, what they got going on in Bermuda, I tell you, I bet that's about 80% of their business. Of course not. It's the most obvious tax trick in the history of the world. It's tax avoidance. If Google and other multinational corporations that run this trick, and it is a great number of them that do this, there is a cost to this. If they don't pay the $2 billion, then you and I are going to pay for it. And I'm sick of it.
That's Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks news show. He's talking about profit shifting, something global tax rules allow multinational corporations to do. Economist Sol Picciotto says our tax system's outdated and it needs reform. Can you tell me what's wrong with the tax system now for multinational corporations?
Instead of being a single unit, the different parts of the multinational in different countries are treated as if they were independent of each other. And that just doesn't work. From an economic point of view, multinationals are multinationals because they operate as a centralized unit. So the tax system allows the multinational to decide on paper where to locate activities, to shift profit around the world and locate the profit in low tax jurisdictions.
So let's use the online retailer Amazon as our example. Like many multinational companies, they're quite legally taking advantage of the tax rules to pay out very little in tax. Sol Picciotto again.
If you're in Spain or Britain or France, you generally log on to Amazon France or Amazon UK. But if you look at your credit card receipts, you'll see Amazon SARL Luxembourg.
Yeah, so there's not many staff there, and it happens to be a low-tax jurisdiction.
That's right. So when you order from Amazon, obviously a big feature of Amazon is they can deliver the items to you very quickly the next day. And so to do that, they have warehouses and distribution facilities. But from the point of view of the current tax system, those have to be treated as separate operations. And then the amount that's charged for distribution to Amazon has to be done at what's called an arm's length price, the price that the Amazon distribution subsidiary charges to the parent company, Amazon, has to be what an independent distributor would charge. Amazon obviously wouldn't be able to make millions and billions of dollars worth of sales unless they could deliver to you next day. So the separate entity concept really doesn't work. The profits in Luxembourg are largely due to the fact that they operate this next day distribution in the UK. So unitary taxation would treat those as a single operation instead of pretending that they're separate operations.
And so the idea of unitary taxation really is to treat these multinational corporations not as a series of separate entities, but as an integrated business with central command and control.
That's absolutely it. And what unitary would do is to put it on a sounder approach territorially. It looks at what is the actual physical presence of the entity, of the firm, within each jurisdiction. So assets. Assets should only be physical assets. They shouldn't be intangibles, for example. Labour, workers, should be where the worker actually works, not which entity within the complex structure of the multinational happens to employ that person, but how much time do they actually spend physically in each country. And sales is done by destination, so it's where the customers are. So that apportions the profit according to the actual presence of the company in each country.
Okay, well, there's a lot of opposition to that. Back in the 80s, I think a lot of multinational corporations were very successful in lobbying against this way of thinking about tax. One of the big blocks is the OECD, which the Tax Justice Network does call the country club of the rich member states. The United Nations gives more of a voice to the smaller and developing countries. So how much resistance is there and how is it overcome?
I think progress could be made if the OECD at least admitted, let's take a serious look at it and let's see if we can finally put the international tax system on a footing that's appropriate for the 21st century.
So, taxing companies based on where they actually do their business. It could be implemented now by your government. Back to Cenk Uygur on why he thinks that's unlikely to happen on a national level, at least in the US.
It's because the rich and the powerful and multinational corporations have bought off our system. Not just here in the US, but so many other countries. Now, you don't know anything about American politics if you think there's going to be any action taken to make sure that these corporations stop hiding their money in places like Bermuda. There will be no such action. By the way, Google, the third largest donor to President Obama's re-election efforts in 2012. I'm sure getting that tax money back into our system is a top priority. They just probably won't get to it for the next 4 years.
But we are seeing examples of large emerging economies like Brazil and non-OECD member states willing to challenge the OECD and express their disagreement with the current international tax rules. Brazil's unilaterally implemented its own tax rules to try and deal with the problem. The OECD's head of tax says it'd take 150 years to implement unitary tax. Professor Kerry Sadiq.
Well, I'm a little more optimistic than the OECD that we will move towards a unitary tax model. I don't think it'll be what has been referred to as the Big Bang approach, a whole move to unitary taxation, but rather there's a managed transition. We may see this via a group of countries committing to unitary taxation, such as the EU, or countries agreeing that a specific industry should move towards unitary taxation. And multinational banking is the ideal industry to move towards unitary taxation.
So how about starting with moving banks to a unitary tax model? And then yes, companies like Google, Amazon and Starbucks. For more information on how to solve tax avoidance, go to www.tackletaxhavens.com. You've been listening to the TaxCast. We'll have more news and analysis next month.